Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We got the chocolates.
What the frick is that?
We got the chocolates.
Don't they do dad jokes?
We got the chocolates.
Wait, there's a podcast?
Yes. Really?
Skinhouse, welcome back to another episode of the We Got the Chocolates podcast. I'm Lee.
I'm Skin.
And that is all we have for you. But it's really just a very quick and brief intro for... which meant fairly similar things, I would have thought. But yeah, just because we have these good chat episodes going on at the moment, I think this is actually the last one that is out today. And that is with yours truly.
Mm-hmm. Lethal. Save the best till last, eh?
That's the theory, I think.
Okay.
Certainly well, the most talkative till last.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely the most talkative. I was worried about mine because I wasn't sure I'd speak very well or get enough words out. You did not have that problem.
No.
Went for a while, just got to sit back and listen to a lot of stuff.
And I think this is when we were severely hungover too. Yeah. This was post our last night in the Hunter Valley. So things were, we were meant to be like packing up, and instead I was just continuing to talk and talk. And so the episode's probably like long. I don't think it is actually. I think it cut down nicely. So we'll be fine. Yeah. You'll love it.
And it was enjoyable. It's good. Good to listen to.
Excellent.
Unlike all your normal gear, you know.
Well, here's how it went.
All right, guys, welcome to our the final of our good chats. Lethal, you're...
Yeah, if you guys could just shut up!
Make sure that stays in.
Sorry, now, back to it. Yeah, so, welcome to our... This haircut's giving me some serious anger issues.
Angry innocent. No, Lethal, your turn to jump in the passenger seat today. You're usually the driver of our little show, but welcome, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be quite weird to have to listen to other people talk rather than just talking over them.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask about that. Is this going to be weird for you? Like, is this going to be like... completely different to what you're used to doing? Well, it obviously is, but is it going to feel weird?
Oh, I think probably now, to be fair, I think that like the actual way, like we sort of take the piss out of the driving the show a little bit. That was probably never something I really even knew I was doing up until maybe a year, or similar time to when sort of we spoke about Mika starting to film and when we sort of started taking it more seriously. I guess we spoke to Mike Fitzpatrick, who's sort of like our podcast manager, and that was basically a role that he sort of said, you're kind of doing this, but I was like doing it without knowing that I was really doing it. So I guess once he sort of pointed it out and said like, oh, in every show there's, you know, driver, reactor, which is probably more what you sort of are, the guy that sits and laughs in the background, which is obviously what Skin is.
I don't know if that's actually a role, but anyway.
I guess I probably embraced it more from that point. So it is like sometimes I find myself sitting like when you were running like a game in a podcast the other day that probably you really should have been driving, I was like feeling weird. I was like, oh, which button am I pressing? Like, yeah, it's probably just something that I've now, since we made that conscious, I guess, choice to describe it as like driving the show kind of thing. And it's something that I aspired to be like Hamish and Andy when we're kind of growing up. Yep. And now like listening to their show with that lens, you can always see that Andy's obviously the driver of it, and he will like hide stuff from everyone else in the hope to get a reaction from Hamish because he just says dumb stuff or funny stuff or whatever. So yeah, it's probably something I like doing now, to be fair.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, we'll take you back. So childhood, brother, sister, I'm assuming sport was a massive part of the Drennan childhood experience.
Yeah. Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, I think I'm probably like pretty fortunate in the fact that like early years, dad was very involved and loved sport. So definitely remember playing everything. He was from South Australia, so he was actually a big like Aussie rules man. But then because he'd moved to Brisbane, he'd embraced league as well. Loved cricket, loved tennis. Like he would pretty much watch any of the sports, which meant that I was pretty exposed to it very early. And I definitely played tennis, baseball, soccer, league. I tried when I was like a little bit older, like probably more 12, and Aussie rules and cricket always sort of like the constant, I guess. And I think dad probably, mum and dad helped foster my love for that. And then Mitch obviously came along 7 years later and obviously was pretty useless in terms of backyard cricket and stuff early doors, but then
glad you added that little bit.
I think dad by that stage, by the time I was maybe like, I don't know what Mitch would have been, 4 or 5, and so I was whatever that is,
yeah, 11 or 12.
Dad was, I think, probably over bowling to me in the backyard and made spin the dummy every time I got out, and him never getting into bat probably. So I think he tried to convince me that Mitch could be like, you know, you could teach your brother how to play, mm-hmm. and then he could actually play with you. And yeah, that was sort of like where I guess our backyard battles became a big part of our lifestyle. And our sister Bronnie was probably not always as keen on the sporting stuff. She was more into she had a lot of imaginary friends and stuff back then, actually. So I think they ended up being like one-on-one battles for bed skin. I taught myself how to bowl with my left arm just to like even the competition in the backyard, because obviously skin was younger. So that was where I like, and I can still bowl with my opposite arm now. And people are always like, are you ambidextrous? I was like, nah, just many years of bowling with my non-dominant arm.
Haven't you ended up doing that in grade cricket? Haven't you got a couple second grade wickets?
I've got a first grade wicket.
With your left arm.
Non-dominant arm, yeah. Right. Shout out to Jake Winter, the poor bloke. Yeah.
Caught on the boundary, obviously.
He was very young. He was caught a bit on, but yeah.
Very slow pace or spin
Left arm orthos, wasn't it?
Is it? Yeah, right.
Left arm orthos. They are quite slow pace, to be fair. I don't know if they would knock off the bales. I've had a couple of LBW shirts with the umpire said not going fast enough.
What's that missing, mate? Well, no, it's hitting, but it's just
rolling.
And you, to the pair of his, I guess, like you guys have started to bring up your dad on the podcast probably a little bit more frequently in the last few years. For those who don't know, Wayne passed away a few years ago, but your dad's been a big inspiration for you guys to sort of, you know, go down this sort of career trajectory with his sense of humor as well?
Yeah, well, certainly for me, I think dad was an idiot, like in the most, in the most lovable way. I just remember him basically like, my humor is his humor, which I think is also very similar to your humor. So it's kind of all fitting well. But yeah, dad just did the dumbest but like funniest stuff. Mm. And probably if he ever had any idea about social media or technology or whatever, he probably would have, I would like to assume he probably would have tried to do something in this sort of area as well. So I think that definitely dad shaped my humor a huge amount. And then, yeah, I think he certainly, like for me, he had a big impact on the fact that I thought that this was something that we were good at, I guess, something that we could. Yeah, I always felt like when I was in a crowd or when I was emceeing people that I was had the ability to I guess give people a laugh and a good time, and that was sort of the way that I wanted to contribute to society, I guess, if I could, if I felt like that was an area that I could get better at and really get stuck into. So yeah, I think if we actually started this years after dad passed away. I think it was 2014 that dad passed away, but he definitely was sort of like, I think the initial seed for why I sort of wanted to do something like this, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And one of the great stories that I've been relayed from your old man is when you had a mate over and he was in one of, what is your mum called? One of his moods or something like that. Yeah. Do you want to give us that story?
I remember this story. Remember this story vividly. So Josh Golby, who actually listens to the podcast, I was good mates with him when we were I reckon like 12, 11 or 12. Mitch was definitely there in the room as well.
I don't remember it at all.
Yeah. But so Josh had like his bub had dropped him over real early in the morning. Dad was still asleep. And obviously like dad wasn't impressed by the fact that me, Skin and Josh were in the room next to his, like belting on the wall and jumping on beds and just making a whole heap of noise basically. And so he came in essentially to say like, shut up, you idiots. But he was quite a nude sleeper.
Aren't we all?
So he came storming in, not knowing Josh was there, obviously, yeah. Just thinking it was his two sons.
Yeah.
He opened the door, gave us a massive spray, like just like, what are you doing? I'm trying to sleep. Worked till whatever last night, blah, blah, blah. Gave us this huge barrage and then looked at Josh and was like, hey, Josh, that's a penis.
Oh,
closed the door and walked out again.
Oh, that's very, very good. So good. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
But we did, like, he was just, I don't know, we'd have so many stories, like, even just random stuff. Like, I think people take the piss out of me now. I think Mikas has probably seen it. He's the way that I sort of talk to Rochelle and stuff like that. Like, when she yelled at me yesterday, Mikas was sitting across the table, yells at me most days, obviously, but yelled at me.
This particular one. Yeah.
Mikas was sitting across the table editing and Rochelle yelled at me. And then I was like, oh, yeah, fair enough. You want a little kiss? Just like, and I just do dumb stuff like that. But I remember Dad, like, yes, Dad would used to walk into our house and like out of nowhere, like we could be sitting there studying and stuff like that. And like Dad, he wouldn't, like, even after him and Mum separated, he would still call her, like, I don't know.
He'd call her everything. He'd walk in and say, hey, Mama.
Yeah, he'd say, howdy, Mama. This is like 8 years after they separated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then whenever she got angry, he'd call her the fire-breathing dragon.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wait, so do you think a lot of you being a dickhead is more learned or just from him?
Nature
or
nurture.
Like, yeah.
I think he definitely nurtured it for sure. Like, I don't know how genetics work, but there's probably a deep predisposition to find stupid things amusing and try and make as many puns and stuff as possible. So, I feel like definitely, obviously, it was a passion that he probably nurtured, well, like that he inspired early days. And then since that time, I've been nurtured it myself quite a bit in terms of the, right. Yeah, I would say.
And it's obviously good that you've ended up finding yourself in a spot where that's somewhat useful, doing a podcast and trying to laugh with Cody, I guess, regularly. But
you'd be surprised, you know, I actually weaved it into my teaching a lot as well when I was a teacher.
Okay, yes, well, that's what
the students loved it.
That's sort of what I was going to ask about. Obviously, before all this started happening, what were you up to and how useful was that trait?
Yeah, well.
Even through school, you would have been an absolute pest through school, I imagine.
Yeah. I've had a lot of teachers like message actually about the chalks and stuff. Like,
oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, saying congratulations and well done. I think more just thankful for the fact that I did something useful after just badgering them for so many years. I think they were quite excited by the fact that it's actually, you know, sort of taken me somewhere. Because, yeah, I think I was a bit of a shit in high school. Looking back, I would say I was hilarious, obviously, but I'm not sure the teachers always thought that my moments that I chose for hilarity, like when they were sort of trying to teach a maths class, Mr. Everett and stuff, like if that was really the time that I needed to be standing, trying my stand-up comic routine.
Make trigonometry exciting, L. Drennan.
So should you take off that algebra and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I'm sure they would have loved it.
That's cool.
Absolute classic.
I think at school I probably, I was like quite intelligent, but probably didn't apply myself the best as I possibly could. And I always sort of just, to be honest, when I grew up, I just always wanted to be a cricketer. Yeah. I actually remember writing on like year 10 quiz or something, like, what do you want to be when you grow older? And I wrote professional cricketer. And then I didn't realize the teacher was reading the responses out to the whole class. Mm. And when she read that, the whole class laughed. I was like, yeah, that's stiff. That was genuinely all I ever like really considered, I think, especially when I was young. And I was kind of going all right at cricket, but probably never. I think that was maybe always a little bit outside my reach. But it was probably 2000, whenever I had the knee reconstruction, like 2009,
yeah,
where I was like, okay, well, because before that I'd probably just done like little jobs and stuff to support me so that I could play cricket and like train for cricket as much as possible up until I was sort of 19, I think. I did a couple of years of an electrician apprenticship. I was useless at that.
Like, oh my God, I can't even imagine it.
So bad. Like, I was in my second year and I remember like my employer saying like, you probably should be able to strip wire by now. And I was like, oh, yeah, it hurts my hands. So I did that for 2 years. Then I had the knee reconstruction, and then I was like, oh shit, I've actually got to probably do something else here. And that was when I started the teaching degree, which was a 4-year degree that I finished in 8 years. So it was good.
Yeah, that took you a while.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
What happened there?
I started out as a primary school teacher, and then I wanted to. So I did a year of that, and then I wanted to specialize in high school, like PE teaching.
Yep.
And then I also had a year in England playing cricket in 2012. So I'd sort of put it on hold for that year. Gotcha. Yeah, I think I would have started in 2010 and finished in 2016.
Oh, yeah. So the same as everyone.
Which was good.
That's fine. That makes sense.
And then that, but in between, I guess in answer to your question, I worked at Rebel Sport for a lot of years. Managed to weave pun making into all of those things. Like, I remember there being like a big sale one time where they literally paid me. Like, I was meant to be in the footwear section, obviously, but I got distracted. And so,
start hitting forehand. Yeah, and so, tennis rackets.
Like, there was this massive line of people just waiting. And so, because like that's not a great shopping experience, I just started like walking around and making puns to them and like going up and like not interviewing them, but just speaking to every customer, like trying to make them laugh. Some of them gave me donuts, but then a lot of it just loved it. So, then my boss like put this orange vest on me. And I just became like the checkout manager.
Yeah.
I was just like walking and checking in with everyone.
It's not even a real job.
It was absolutely not a real job. I was like, this is the best day of my life. I'm literally just having conversations with customers that should be angry.
Back with the job at Rebel Sport as well, did you ever encounter sort of maybe any customers that maybe they lingered around too much, maybe brought some gear back that maybe shouldn't have been in the back office or anything like that?
Yeah. That's a great story. I worked at, it was actually Indooroopilly A-Mart then, which was very close to Goatee. I was playing at Valleys. This was whatever, 2012, 13 or something. Yeah. And I was playing, I lived in the Redlands, but I worked over there closer for cricket sort of thing. And it was just some of the, Goatee obviously knew that I worked there. So he would regularly find ways to come into the store and just be there. I'm not sure why. In one particular instance, we had this cricket bag that Goatee had actually did get from Queensland Cricket. Back then, we were both like doing after school.
Okay.
So we did like cricket coaching for a bit of extra income. So Goatee had actually taken this bag, but then I'd said, hey, mate, can I borrow that bag you've got? I've got to do a school like this afternoon sort of thing. And so I ended up with this cricket bag. And then when I rang Goatee to say, oh, I'm dropping this bag back to you, he was like, nah, I don't want it. You take it back to Queensland Cricket. And I was like, I'm not taking it back to Queensland Cricket. You got it. You take it back. And so it just became for like probably 6 months, this thing of like dropping it at each other's house and like trying different ways to make sure it was like he bike locked it to my bed. Like, just like stupid.
Obviously much easier just to take it back to Queensland Cricket. No fun.
We were talking about this the other day.
We don't know where it is.
Like, because neither of us ever took it.
Yeah.
So we don't know where it is.
It's still on Lee's old roof.
It genuinely could be in my old house.
We absolutely didn't take it back. But anyway, this one day, so in the midst of this, I've come out from my lunch break and the girl at Indooroopilly A-Mart has gone, oh, Lee, someone just dropped off a nice package for you. And I was like, what? Like, because that wasn't a normal thing to get deliveries to your workplace. And I walked around the corner to where the counter was and it's this stupid cricket bag. And I was like to the girl, I was like, did you just take a random bag? Like, what if it had explosives in it or something? She was like, oh, I didn't think about that. I was like, yeah. Great, excellent. So I just had this random cricket bag sitting and I've had to drag it out to the back staff room. Just like all the customers are going to be like, what's wrong with this guy?
Indooroopilly Shopping Centre back to your car to leave.
put a price tag on it, yeah, just put it out and just shit on the floor and just hope someone took it.
Cash only.
I should have tried to sell it, that's for sure. Yeah, Rocky.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When was it then that you started traveling around for cricket? You said you've done that year in England in 2012, was it?
Yeah.
Which I recall was rather wet. I don't think there was that much cricket played. But then, and then since then, you've obviously done a fair bit as well.
Yeah. So then I really liked my season in England, but it felt a bit like I'd put uni on hold. It rained literally most of the time. Obviously, I didn't know Dave the Brit that knows jack shit back then. Yeah, otherwise, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
It felt a lot like, to be fair, that when I was sitting there during the week, I was sort of just doing nothing. Like there were times where I got to go and travel and I got to see France and Spain and
it's
some really cool stuff. But like they were probably, you know, four trips in 26 weeks kind of thing. And so there's a lot of weeks of sitting there watching it rain and not really being able to do it a whole heap. So I think the next year I was like, oh, I've got to really go back to uni, essentially. Like, I've got to get closer to getting this degree done. Mm-hmm. And so the next year, rather than going to England, I got the opportunity to go up to Darwin and play in the winter. Basically, like, at that point, I just wanted to play cricket all the time and as many games as I could, which was the whole point for going to England. The opportunity was the same in Darwin. It was pretty hot and rained less in the dry season up there. And it was a good standard of cricket, like played against some really good cricketers. And that was 2013. And then from that opportunity, basically like Jimmy Pearson had already sort of jumped me in Queensland in that next like pecking order to get behind Chris Hartley at the time. I went to Darwin. The South Australian coach was Darren Berry at the time. He saw me play up there and said, like, why don't you come to South Australia? Like, we don't have much behind Ludeman. Kind of thing, was essentially like not on a contract or anything like that, but just like come down and see how you go. That next season, 2013-14, I went down to Adelaide and played for West Torrens down there. Went horrific. When he said come down and see how you go, it was like I don't think a person's ever gone worse. I don't think I dealt with the pressure very well. Like I being the fact that it was just all I wanted to do was play cricket. I remember going to my first net at West Torrens, and up here we'd never trained on turf before, and down there that's like incredibly weird. Like we train on like artificial grass, and down in Adelaide they train, everything's done on turf wickets. And when I walked into bat, because I was like this new kind of import from Brisbane, the whole training session stopped and just watched my net. And I would have nicked off four times in five balls, and then everyone just like started training again. I was just like, oh, that fucking sucks.
Fills you with confidence.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, and I went poor. Like I was very, even like as a batter, I was very like back foot. That was my scoring zones. It was like cutting and pulling. And I went to Adelaide where the wickets were quite low and you more had to be like quite good on the front foot sort of thing. So I just remember getting LBW a lot of times in that first season when I went down there. So I'd almost moved home, to be fair, because I was missing home. Like obviously always been really close with my family. And I remember definitely in that first year, that 2013-14, I was like, oh, this sucks. I'm going home. But I sort of just didn't want to be. I've seen a lot of players kind of do that, like go for 1 year
and
float back and like it just does nothing. I just didn't want that to be my kind of legacy, I guess. I wanted to have more of a crack than that and see if I could get it sorted. So I remember going, that off season I went to Neil DaCosta, who's now like Marnus's batting coach. Goaty's been to him. He was Phil Hughes' batting coach, Michael Clark's batting coach. Like, and you've been to him as well since Skin. Like, and he was amazing for me. Like, in terms of, I was always very, I sort of made a decision like early in that season, going like, I'm gonna need to learn how to hit the ball off the front foot, like on these wickets down here, because it's just, I've got nothing otherwise. And so I basically went to him with that plan, and I went by myself the first time, and he fed one ball to me, and then he was like, "Come down here." I was like, "All right, yep." And he said, "You do a lot of shit wrong."
He's so good like that, isn't he?
Very blunt.
So it became like a process of sort of reinventing myself a little bit as a batter. I was always a wicket keeper, and I was a good wicket keeper. Worked with like Spud Murphy when I was young, and so probably always took the wicket keeping, like almost that old school idea of like being a wicket keeper first kind of thing, because I was coached by Brad Murphy. That was probably his more his sort of thing. So I'd always taken wicket keeping way more seriously than batting, and probably just thought if I'd chipped in with some runs, it was a good thing. But at that point, it was like Adam Gilchrist had played for however many years. You kind of needed to be able to bat.
Yep.
They were never going to just pick a keeper that can't bat anymore. So, yeah, that was 2014. I went back up to Darwin, scored plenty of runs. Like, I think that's where I got my high score. My high score still is 179, not out, and I've got it twice. Once was up there in Darwin, and then once back here in Brisbane.
Right. And well, either of them off about 60 balls.
No, it didn't break Goaty's record. Okay. 179 off 250 doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
Most people fucking sleep, that's what it does.
Okay, but yeah, and then you obviously ended up going well down in South Australia.
That next year, I remember I ran really well. Like, I think that was the year, like, I won the batting award for our club, West Torrens, and then I saw my name on the board down there. You know those boards that they always have in cricket clubs, but usually they're like 5 years behind. So I never actually got to see my name on the West Torrens board when I was down there.
Yeah.
And then I went back down last year, and I was like, oh, cool, they put it up there.
I mean, they spelled it wrong.
And in amongst that, there's just Kelvin Smith 11 times in a row. Kelvin Smith, lead runner. It's good. But yeah, that next year I went really well. And then it became, probably my favorite place to, and I love being home now and stuff, but it was definitely an experience that I enjoyed so much. I've still got so many mates from those years. I stayed there till 2018. Now I've still got plenty of mates down there that I communicate with daily, really, like with Spencer Johnson is now sort of taken off. He was Spencer is Christmas.
Is he ever?
But like at that stage when I was playing, he was a young kid that probably like got injured a lot. But then when he played, we were like, this guy bowls rockets. Like, and it was kind of, it's cool to see those guys that I played with, like Daniel Drew, coming through and kind of being good state cricketers now as well. It's a cool thing. It was a great club and like someone that I'll always look back on incredibly fondly. I think when I moved back in 2018, even I was a little bit like, didn't enjoy playing cricket as much as when I played there. So it took me a while to sort of probably find my feet up here again, like going the other way, because I was down there for 5 seasons. So it took a while. We obviously ran that triple premiership that year, which I've rarely mentioned.
Never haven't heard about that.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, got the David Hooks medal in the final, the 100 in the grand final for that 2-day flag.
Okay. I flew down to watch your semi-final. You went well that game. That was good.
That was when Nick Best told me I was internally ill because I was so scared.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of the great guys.
I should have flown down for the granny, but I wasn't sure you'd make it.
Lee, I just don't know how to say this.
That's what he said. I don't know how to describe this to you. You're just internally ill. You're that scared. But... correct.
Bingo, Bella.
Literally nicked off 3 balls later.
And now, like, so you moved back up there, and obviously that's probably when all this sort of kicked off, 2019. We got the chocolates. Yeah. Tell us how that all started. Go from there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I initially moved back, like, I just wanted to be closer to me and Mitch. Were probably always very close as growing up, obviously. And then I moved away sort of from 2012, obviously coming back home and seeing them heaps, but I'd never obviously been at home properly until from that time, 2012 to 2018, pretty much. So Mitch was sort of pretty old by the time I actually got home. What would you have been when I moved back at 28? You were 21 or whatever. So I remember moving back right before his 21st birthday. And like, I don't think either Mitch or I were great like communicators in terms of ringing each other and texting each other. And like, so even though we kind of always were incredibly close when we were young, and when we'd come home, we'd still love each other and be very tight. We never like probably showed it that much while we were away. Mm. And I think there was a part of me that probably missed that a huge amount, which was definitely part of the reason why I just always still felt like I loved Adelaide. I really enjoyed it, but I always felt like I was on holidays. Mm. Like I always felt at some point I was going to come back and Brisbane was going to be where I wanted to live, because I just wanted to be closer to Mitch and Brian and Mum, our family, I guess. I probably thought Ruby was on her last legs at that point that she'd left.
Oh, yeah. Another 10 years later, she was still here.
Ruby, our dog, so another 10 years, she was still kicking.
That makes no sense. We thought that for so long.
Yeah, but that was 2018. I think I didn't know that this is what I wanted to start at that point. It was more just like I was emceeing weddings. Again, I sort of felt like I loved any opportunity I got to speak in public. I felt like I could, I guess, light up a room a little bit with my stupidity and just ability to make dumb puns and stuff. And I guess I loved doing that. So when I would MC, people would always say to me like, oh, you got to do this for a job. You got to do this for a job. And I just didn't really know how to do that. Like I don't think I could MC random people's weddings and be quite as successful as what I was with people that I obviously knew, because I knew funny stories about them and I could bring them up. And I think at that stage, I saw like the podcast thing. I had a mate named Charlie that's involved, and he was like one of the lead ones that sort of put pressure on me all the time, going like, you got to do something like this. Have you looked at these podcasts yet? And at that point, I think it was like Bloke in a Bar was doing a rugby league one.
Yeah, just kicking off.
He was going good. There was like big American ones like Joe Rogan and Call Her Daddy. But they'd only, that really even then, they'd only just started, like this 2018-19 sort of stuff. So they were only just kicking off then. And I sort of thought, oh, there you go, that's something that I can do. And I kind of probably aspired to be on the radio. That was even then, that was what I was thinking, is like, if I can start something like this and build it up, then maybe someone will give me a job in radio. Or I had no interest in going back to uni to study again, but so I wanted it to more be like a practical experience, something that I can say, hey, I got this off the ground, can you give me a job sort of thing? Which now obviously, don't want that at all. I just want to keep doing what we're doing. But yeah, that was probably the inspiration for starting it. I didn't even feel like, I guess my reason for like why I wanted to do it was because I didn't think that I could wanted to be overly educational with our podcast or anything like that. I just wanted to provide people a laugh. I think back then it was, that was around like the COVID time and stuff as well. There was a lot of people that were stuck inside and didn't have much to sort of laugh about. I don't know, it sounds a bit corny, but like laughter is the best medicine kind of thing. That's always been my approach to healing. To if I'm not having a great day, I think having a laugh and finding something to really have a good cackle about it gets me in a better mood. Yeah, there's not too many people that have it bad day if they're with their mates and laughing a huge amount. So that was the inspiration, I guess, for why I wanted to start it. I felt like I could provide that to other people if we could get to the point where people listen to it.
Yeah. And do you have a favorite element of what we do? Is there something that you just absolutely love doing, or is it the whole process, or like where are you at your happiest when we're working?
Yeah, I think like genuinely, because people ask me all the time, like, are you ever worried that you will run out of content? But particularly in relation to the podcast, I think we've done like, we're close to 200 episodes now. We've done 213, I think. So couldn't be closer.
Yeah.
And like my answer is genuinely no, because like, I feel like the podcast is a forced social interaction between me and my best mates. Like it's, I don't think that I would never go to if me and you guys were to go have a beer, I would just sit there and just stare at you in silence.
All out of content, boys. Yeah.
Well, it's so funny because people often say, like, why don't we just, as soon as we like get to the office somewhere, let's just turn the fucking mics on from there.
Yeah.
Because that's just, probably us as a group. That's just who we are. So. Yeah.
Because at the moment we just find ourselves saying siftipur all the time. Because like the stuff we want to talk about in life, we're like, oh, this would probably be decent content for the podcast. Like it's, and for that reason, I'd never get worried that we would run out of content, because I think they're just genuine conversations that we have that we then maybe frame with a jingle and stuff and get Mikus to sing. But
yeah,
but I think that's what I like.
Stop doing that, I reckon.
That's what I like the most about it is I think that's where I'm at my happiest is I feel like I'm just having a chat with my mates and that other, you know, like out the Chockies kind of are involved in that really that they're obviously they can't talk back to us, but they just get to listen and feel like they're included in a group of mates, which I think is a really cool thing. And that's what I love doing. I find whenever we hang out together that we laugh a huge amount. You usually do stupid pranks and stuff like that. And
where did he ever?
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. 15 minutes ago.
poor Skittle just need new underpants.
And like that's what we do is have a great time. So all that really is happening is that we're recording it. Mm. And I love that. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That's so good. And I asked the same question to Mitchy yesterday. So what's next? What's next for the Chocks? Where do you see us? Where are we going?
Yeah, like I think that it's cool that we've probably started even more as a podcast, but we've been able to branch out across like social media. And I haven't seen too many people that are successful at doing both, if that makes sense, like successful at doing a really good podcast and also have a really good presence on YouTube doing other videos. We've got some great video ideas and I haven't seen a lot that have done both. I mean, incredibly well. Like a lot of people are obviously very successful on YouTube as well, like Joe Rogan and stuff. But he's just putting his podcast up. And I genuinely love doing the podcast, but I also love doing like those stupid other video ideas we've got and stuff. And I would love for us to be able to do both really successfully. And I think we've definitely got the capacity, the people in this room to be able to do that. And I'm excited to keep getting better at. And the other thing for me, I reckon, is that we didn't really, certainly Mitch and I weren't, like obviously Mikus was a video guy, but we weren't at all. Like we didn't know how to do any video editing.
Yeah, same.
We didn't have a clue. We're like, I think being involved in this process and this sort of project has given us opportunities to learn skills that I never thought I would. And I think we can keep the exciting part about that, I guess, is that the point we're at now, I feel like we can continue to get better and better in terms of the quality of product that we put out, the videos that we put out.
The speed in which we put them out.
The speed in which we put them out. Always worth the wait though. But then like, I guess longer term than that, I could see us doing like a, you know, I watch like the Grade Cricketer Boys do like a live tour where they present on stage. And I've always thought that that's something that we'd be unreal at. And that I would love to do.
Speak for yourself.
Skin. A couple of deck chairs.
Yeah. Two at the front, two at the back.
We won't turn Skin's mic on. But yeah, like I don't know. Even like Mitch obviously takes a piss out of how scared he gets in front of people and stuff. But I think you would also like the idea of doing a live tour sort of thing like that. That's a project that I think
probably
would be awesome.
Something that makes us so unique is that like the four of us in this room plus Disc over there as well. I think we are so similar, but also so different as well in regards to what we bring to the. We'll call it a show, but and that's probably what makes it so. Good, the fact that we can literally just take the piss out of each other and it's just, and we just leave it at that. It's so fun.
Yeah. I agree. It's amazing. And I think I would enjoy that a huge amount and being able to do that. So I don't necessarily think there's like massive grand plans. I think we're on the right track and the right pathway. It's just, like you said, like getting everything better in terms of quality, but then definitely also the speed that things go out and like the processes for how we work as a business that's still very new. And like 6 months ago, we would probably still not even talking about it as a business. Like it sounds kind of weird saying that. It was something that we started as a hobby that we now think there is an opportunity to make it a successful sort of business. When we talk about stuff to do with merch and stuff like that as well. So there's lots of just little elements that we've kind of done little bits and pieces on that we've never obviously quite nailed. And we'd love to over the next couple of years, get those processes really effective. That would be a very cool thing and a cool achievement, I think.
Beautiful. I think that might wrap us up. Mate, thanks for letting us grill you for a change. Thanks for letting us give us the car keys to the show. Hope you all enjoyed it.
No worries. Thanks, man.
Can you pass me some wine? Yeah. Or a beer? Yeah. Oh, also, well, Lee, how's your head?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't speak at all about the...
Yeah, I don't really.
Like,
I
was, jazz.
We really jumped into it.
Yeah. We must admit.
We're blind. Yeah. Well, we're not blind now.
Not anymore.
We were last night.
7 hours ago.
Oh, so I feel horrific.
Lee was blind cutting my hair.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I gave Mitch a haircut.
We've got pizza in the pool.
We've got no more alcohol because we're out.
Yeah.
Yes. We're in a winery, so we really should have run out.
Yeah. We're essentially sweating Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, we've just got stubby coolers on their own on the table. Great.
It's been a long week, but a wonderful week.
It's a great look. What a week.
It's me.
Cut the chop.
That's been fun.
There you go. That was our final Good Chat episode because we are back with episode 215 this time next week, which is very exciting. How'd you go, Skin?
Beautifully. Yeah. Thoroughly enjoyed that since we recorded the intro. A lot's changed.
Perfect. And we have got some great feedback. It's been awesome, actually. I know we've definitely posted Skin's Good Chat episode on YouTube last week. There's been some really cool comments. If you do like sort of, if you're more of a visual learner, you can go and watch them on YouTube as well. Our YouTube channel is obviously just at We Got The Chocolates. And that's where you'll find us on all social media platforms as well. And we'd love to hear from you on those.
Absolutely. You can also get in touch with us at our website, wegotthechocolates.com.au. You can leave a voice message on the chalk line if you'd like to hear yourself on a future ep, or just write in below that as well if that's your preference.
We've also got some hoodies and a hat at the moment. There's plenty more coming. We're doing plenty of work in the merchandise space at the moment, but you may as well just go and check out the stuff that we actually do have. That's also at that website that Skin just mentioned, wegotthechocolates.com.au. And the other thing that we would love you to do if you are feeling in a helping mood is to just jump on to either Spotify or Apple, wherever you choose to listen, and give us a rating and a review. Make them quite entertaining, and then we'll probably read them out on next week's podcast as well. Thank you so much again. We love having you here. Remember that if you are out having a good laugh with your mates throughout the week, then you're absolutely getting the chocolates. We'll speak to you again this time next week. And as always, good luck in the future. And that's Stumps.
Love you.
Love you.
Out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.